Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Josh Brown, it's Friday. It's the UBP, the UBP. It's a whole other world for you over there on the other side of the room, but at least I can see you and love you. How are you doing?
I can see and love you too. I am, I'm just like vibing, man. I'm just happy to be here. Happy to fill in for old Julian Gill.
Old Julian Gill.
This famous show.
Man, no, he did tell me last week that he was on holiday this week. I then promptly forgot. And we've had a whirlwind week of doing all sorts of different things in What Culture Towers. So it got to last night and I said, hey, brother Jules, what are we doing about the UBP tomorrow? And he said, I'm on holiday, man. I'm not even remotely involved. And I was like, Corb, hit the Josh Brown button, get the man in and make everything work again.
So I saw it out the window.
The bat signal.
I saw the bat signal. It just in the shape of your head and beard and spikes was just bellowing into my window. And
looking
I thought,
like the naked chef or whatever it is icon. I can't even think what that is now. But there's some sort of logo. I'm putting that out there in the ether.
Okay.
There's a logo that's a set of hair and a beard. I'm sure it's the naked chef.
Naked chef?
Naked food?
Naked deli?
Maybe it's the naked deli.
Okay.
It's not going to make any sense to anyone outside of the immediate vicinity we're in, but I've seen that logo.
It doesn't make sense to me, and I'm in the immediate vicinity we're in.
So nearby where we live is a logo that looks like my head. Point being that this is the Entitled Banter podcast, and we ask you guys whatever you'd like us to talk about, whether it's games, movies, food stuff, whatever's on your mind. So we'll get through as many questions as possible. I think I said our name, Scott Taylor, joined by Josh Brown. I don't know, but let's carry on. First question from Mr. Cheeseman is, do you think early 2000s gaming culture is dead, e.g. midnight releases, LAN parties, and games that actually worked and didn't need a day one patch to fix a game? Now, this is interesting, because when was the last time you did a midnight release?
In person, yes. It would have been Fallout 4 in 2015. Ooh. That was the last big one that I, you know, felt it was worthy to go to. Mm. That's a really interesting question because, you know, I feel like, you know, gamers of a certain age, you know, will always associate this industry with like that early 2000s, yes, mid 2000s kind of culture.
I keep trying to write about something else and then all my mind just goes, no, but what about PsyOps? What about what about this thing from 2003 that no one played?
Yeah, because it was such a defining era, wasn't it? It was like when video games kind of, as we know them today, sort of exploded and the kind of, you know, marketing culture around them kind of came into focus with the internet. Like the internet was such a big part of this. But stuff like LAN parties, you know, they were obviously older than that. I think for me, my answer would be that that kind of culture will never go away, although it has certainly waned in popularity. Mm. I just feel like there's always going to be a subset of hardcore fans who keep that stuff alive, maybe not in terms of, you know, the aesthetics and what have you, but certainly in the mentality of, you know, quote unquote old school gamers. I think that will be championed, you know, like kind of like vinyl is, you know, we get to the point where we have CDs, we have tapes, we have Spotify,
yes,
and everyone goes, oh, remember vinyl? I think people do that with LAN parties.
What they need to do in regards to, because one of the things about going down to a midnight launch in person was that you might get a bit of tat, you might get a poster or a t-shirt, or like, you get to see other people and talk in the queue about like, oh my God, we're finally going to get to play it. And that's what made something like Halo 3 a big deal, or San Andreas was a big deal. And I love that stuff. The thing that you don't get now, and although I will say that if you hop on Twitter and just stick the game's name in and then filter by latest, you can get a little bit of that energy with people finding something at the midnight launch. launch. However, there is a massive untapped potential for collector's editions, tat bundles to be delivered somehow at midnight. So you can open that thing at at midnight time. I would take that. I would take a midnight delivery of like a collector's edition, a big statue or something, because I love unboxing that stuff. But it's always either in the morning after or the post is delayed or whatever it is. Whereas with this, like you had to go in person because digital broadband connections weren't solid enough. But I feel like the in-person, the tactile feel of something, that's what he's referring to, or they're referring to.
I think it is the ease of access in terms of, you know, like digital distribution, like you mentioned there. You know, that's so easy now.
Yeah.
But the idea of going out to a store at midnight just doesn't feel as kind of thrilling as it was when you could stay at home and get like the kind of the same product. I'm with you. I would like more kind of collector's editions, or at least midnight editions or whatever, day one editions that kind of have that extra tat in that make it a little bit more exciting. Because I want to get excited about games in the way that I did for Fallout 4 or GTA 5, which I also did a midnight for. I don't know what title would actually get me interested in actually leaving my house at midnight to pick up again. Like maybe Fallout 5, maybe the Elder Scrolls. I would definitely do it for the Elder Scrolls.
If there was a midnight Starfield launch and they played the marketing cards right, so you didn't really know, like you know enough about what it is, the review scores are quite positive, whatever, but you need to get it to really get a feel for it, that would be great midnight energy, let's say. But at the same time, like it depends how they do it. I feel like the ease of access stuff has just kind of taken away the feel of a midnight launch. I couldn't tell you any digital midnight launch. I don't have those memories, but I remember going to Smith's Toy Shop and getting a copy of WWE 2K22 because it was sold out everywhere.
Yeah.
And I still remember getting that. There is like you build memories in physicality. I feel like they're much harder to do in a digital space.
100%. I fully agree with that. Like when I think about, you know, buying video games, it always goes to those moments where you kind of have a bit of a scare that you might not be able to get it. I remember trying to track down the first Red Dead Redemption on launch in my dad's.
I love that rush.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't make sense because you shouldn't, but like...
Well, I was as a child thinking he wasn't going to get it, or a younger man, like my dad's running from store to store to see if they have it in, like town to town. Like, it's precarious, but it's exciting. I think what kind of killed midnight launches for me was updates, like updates and installations. I remember getting back from Fallout 4,
GTA 5,
I launch.
Got home and didn't play it until 3:30 in the morning and then just fell asleep.
100%. Like, those games took so long to install. I remember going with my mate to get, my mate Chris, to get Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront.
Nice.
And we were quite excited all day. You know, we left the flat, we went to get it, we came back, and all we could play was that Darth Vader opening while the game was installing. And by that time, you know, it's like 2-3 a.m. in the morning, and you might as well have just got it the next day.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's like the hype's dissipated, the energy of the moment has dissipated, and you're just sort of going, oh, we're just staying up now and there's not anything to actually do. It's like 2 a.m. That whole thing of like the rush to try and track down the last remaining copy of something, again, you shouldn't really love it because it's scarcity, and like the digital era has completely solved that problem. However, I will always remember me and my friends, we played the Final Fantasies when we were younger, and we played like Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, whatever, and we were like, we should play Final Fantasy 6 like in the moment on a Saturday afternoon, and it was like way before digital anything. So we started ringing around all the game shops and we found one copy of Final Fantasy 6 on PS1 way over, like, you know, like about an hour away somewhere, and then ringing my mum being like, can you drive us to this place?
I love this.
So we can get a copy of Final Fantasy VI because we need to get it. And like, bless my mum, absolutely love my mum. She was like, yeah, I'll do that. I love you enough, fine. And so like me and one of my other like best friends just all like bouncing around in the back of the car going, we're going to go get Final Fantasy VI.
Yes.
You'll never get that again in a digital space. And so it's just like, I do miss those things. And I'm just saying, Dragon's Den style, if someone wants to create some sort of collector's edition delivery for midnight for game releases, that's a big I would love that.
Please do it. I want to feel something again.
I would love to feel in 2022 once again. Also, patch stuff installations, massive thing that just gets directly in the way of everything, because hardly ever do you play a decent game straight away. It needs a week of patches. It needs a month. It needs Halo Infinite still floundering, even though it's just started its second season. I saw Joseph Staten just saying that, oh, it's been a rough launch. I was like, it's been a rough 2 years, mate.
It certainly has.
I guess 1 year or whatever it is at this stage. Question from Steve, question for Josh. What recommendation have you had for Scott to play, eat, or listen to that he says he will do but never does?
Thank you, Steve. As you may know, this is normally like the inverse. Scott recommends me so much and then I try to get around to them.
You finally had sugar and coffee. It wasn't for you, but you did it.
Well, this is it. I do get around to them eventually.
Yes.
You know, sugar and coffee, finally tried it. We'll get to Ori one day probably. But with you, I think there's only a few things that kind of come to mind. One, The Sopranos, the TV show.
I watched the first episode.
Obviously, you did.
I thought it was really bad.
You watched the first episode. And I wanted you to watch more, you know?
I know.
There's so much more to it than the pilot. I tried to get you to watch that show for like 2 years. Going on 2 years at this point. That was a pandemic rewatch for me. And I was like, yes. Scott, please watch this.
I hear nothing but praise about The Sopranos. Totally. And I did the first episode and I was like, it's fine. It's not hooking me at all. But I thought that about Better Call Saul. And then that's one of my favorite shows of all time. I just need to stick with it.
That's it. I know it's a lot to say it to someone, you know, you got to stick with it. But I think with The Sopranos, you only need a few episodes. You only need, you know, less than the first season to get in, and then you hopefully will be in. Game wise, you do normally jump into the games, just not for as long as I would maybe like you to.
I will admit, one of the nicest things anyone's ever done was you bought me a copy of Prey when that came out, 2016 or something,
17, I think,
2017, and you got me a copy of Prey. I think it was for Christmas or something, and it was also for being able to work together for the first time after talking to each other on emails and stuff for years, and that was so lovely. And I was like, oh my god, I didn't vibe with this game's demo that much, but I love Josh Brown, I will play this game. So I played a few hours of it and I didn't finish it. And I know that Prey is one of those games that's being reappraised and being reapproached over the years. And I do want to go back to it. I do want to go back and love it because I didn't vibe with Deathloop at all.
Yeah.
But I do think that Prey's intro is like one of the best intros of the last 10 years. And so I've done about 3 to 5 hours-ish in that game. And I just, it didn't keep me. It didn't pass the subconscious test where I wasn't thinking about it. A week passed. I didn't realize that a week passed and it dropped off. But I want to do it.
Which is totally the only reason I push for Prey is because, you know, I'm kind of similar. Arcane stuff I've kind of enjoyed, but bounced off in the past. You know, Dishonored, I kind of bounced off. Deathloop, I really enjoyed, but that kind of game hasn't really stayed with me in the way that I thought it would at the time. But
yes.
Prey was the one where I was just thinking, like, this game is something special. And it's kind of that thing where you just want someone else to kind of get into your brain and understand and think the
like
same
feel
way.
Feel the
as
energies
you.
Of Prey.
But that's the beauty of people. And that's the beauty of games, that they're so different in that everyone has different experiences.
Yes.
No, go on, you first.
Oh, I was just going to super quickly say that I keep seeing Prey is one of the many games that's been completely overhauled in terms of performance on Series X,
right,
which is a huge reason to go check it out. I don't know if it's 120 frames a second, but it's definitely 4K, it's definitely 60. That game looks gorgeous.
If they have patched the loading times in that game, that would be a huge improvement because you do a lot of traveling between areas towards the end, and the loading times were a killer. However, just to finish off this question,
yes,
the one game this year that I've been asking you to play that you are yet to get around to is that Before Your Eyes, which I've talked about a lot towards the start of the year.
Was that this year you talked about that?
That was this year.
Oh my god.
It was like January, man.
But
that's
Sweet Lord.
If you don't know, that's the PC game where you use your blinks, or you don't have to if you're unable to do that. But it's mainly through blinks where you control time in a
person's unable to blink.
Life. Well, I don't know. It's an accessibility thing.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
Of course, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, you know, if you can't see.
I thought you meant
what
in the game
you.
That was like a mechanic to ration out your blinks to see parts of the story.
No,
I get you.
I just totally mean an accessibility option.
No, because I remember when you talked about it, and yeah, very emotional game, very like first person, and like, yeah, you're experiencing someone's life and everything, but isn't it only on PC?
It is.
That's what makes me run a mile. I can play on my Steam Deck if Valve ever ship the effing thing, but not yet.
I mean, I don't often play PC games. Mm. And that's when you know it's a good recommendation, I think, because I only crack open that PC once every 5 years.
It's true. I got a new MacBook and I downloaded like the 3 Steam games that are actually like only on Steam that I care about, like FTL. And Massive Chalice and different strategy games. So go play FTL, mate.
I'm
faster than light travel.
Well, see, the
You'd
thing is
it.
Now, if I say yes, I will play it, you'll get a question in like a year's time where it's like, oh, Scott, what
is he, has he done it yet?
Yeah.
We've got multiple Ori questions. I'll see if we actually get that far through these. But there's an Ori question down here somewhere. Quick question from David. What's our game of the year so far?
Elden Ring.
Very nice. Also Elden Ring.
Ooh.
Sifu is up there. Sifu is my number 2. I did get the platinum in Sifu the other day thanks to the now lower difficulty to finally finish the game under 25 years old where you've got to not die like 5 times in the whole game. So I adore Sifu. I think that thing is pristine, but it's going to be Elden Ring.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's just going to be Elden Ring.
It's like, you know, it's sort of unfortunate for any game to go up against Elden Ring.
I do feel sorry for the rest of this year.
100%.
Maybe that's why the rest of this year is so barren, that it's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, everyone's full. We've made all these meals.
I wonder though, because Elden Ring came out so early in the year, obviously the end of February, I think. Wasn't it the end of February?
For Elden Ring?
Yes.
I want to say not as March or April.
Okay, it came out early is the point.
Yes.
And I wonder if we get to the end of the year, you know, December time, and I wonder if we've if critics just become sick of talking about Elden Ring. So then they go, actually, Game of the Year is this other thing.
Yes, they'll 1,000,000% be some indie darling that comes out of nowhere that you get a whole bunch of critics planting a flag on because it's scared, because it's got too boring and expected to be Elden Ring. However, like the thing, I will say this right now, and people can call me on this in another 7 months. I do wish that Elden Ring had better storytelling. I do wish that it threaded itself together a bit better. If there was a flaw, we did this whole spoiler podcast thing on this. Because if I was going to point at one thing and be like something else could do this better, it would be the storytelling aspect. It would be making me care about that world a bit more. Considering the amount of lore that is there, that has now been unearthed by the likes of Vati Vidya stitching together all the different pieces of lore items and stuff. I wish that was front and center a bit more, just a little bit more drive, etc. Next was John from You Done Messed Up Aaron, who says, "Good day, gents. My partner and I are getting married on Saturday. Congratulations!
Congratulations!
That's lovely." We've been thinking about some of the games that we played and how they've brought us together or brought us closer together. Our favorite by far was It Takes Two. That's the perfect co-op game. Yeah. Even though I would say it overstays its welcome, but that thing plays immaculately well. What gaming memories with your partners have stuck with you?
Oh, that's a great question. First off, congratulations, and yes, I hope the wedding goes incredibly well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As for this question, though, for me, it's playing Resident Evil 6, the co-op campaigns of that game with my current girlfriend when we were first getting together. Mm-hmm. You know, we just wanted a co-op game, and we were just like, well, what should we try? What's kind of like dome that we don't have to really pay much attention to? And Resident Evil 6 was the one. And God bless her, she like just played through this bad game for so many hours just because we were starting to get to know each other. So I always think of that experience.
That's very nice.
Fondly.
Mine, because my wife doesn't like, she likes strategy stuff. She likes Stardew Valley. She likes things that are sort of management simmy or with like various like numeric systems or like grinds to get stuck into. Like her favorite game is like Warcraft or whatever. So it's not going to be shooters. Like we've tried doing parts of the Halo campaigns. We've tried anything with aiming. She's just like, I'm not comfortable. I don't like it.
Yeah.
So we've done more stuff like we built a whole, I think I've mentioned this on some podcasts or maybe a chatty face before, that we essentially built our like Inception utopia dream world inside Minecraft and lived there together for a while with our little like deluxe house and everything else, which a creeper blew it to pieces. And we were like, well, the dream's dead. We'll just play something else. So it would be that, or it was me and her discovering PT together back in 2014, because we were both watching the show live when, I think it was Jack Trenton who said, you know, there's a demo available, just go see what it is. And discovering that with someone, neither of us knowing what it was, and realizing it was Hideo Kojima, obviously Norman Reedus and everything, and just like my sort of gamer nerd brain freaking out, her horror aficionado brain freaking out. It would be that. And although PT is, you know, it is playable teaser, it's a very short thing, that is absolutely one of my best gaming memories ever.
I would completely just rip you off for this answer as well, because I had a very similar experience with my partner as well. We went through that game together. We were so scared by it. It was such a great moment, even though obviously it's only single player, one of you is playing, the other is watching. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of one of those cinematic moments, I suppose, where it doesn't matter whether you're playing or whether you're watching, you're both having an absolute killer experience.
The thing about, because PT is like genuinely terrifying, and like that, like shared horror, especially in a game space, is the best. Like, because like one of you has to push the stick forward to actually go into the room or whatever it is. And in PT's case, like when the door starts opening and there's something behind the door or there's something in the sink or whatever it is in the room that you're in, both of you not wanting to do that. I was always like, I'll just push ahead. How bad can it be?
Yeah.
Whatever. But both of you are sort of like jumping and jolting and reacting to it. Like that whole shared thing is great. If you guys, Aaron, haven't played, or anyone listening to this who wants to play something with a partner, play Until Dawn together, make the decisions together, like do that whole story together. It's brilliant.
Great theoretically, right?
Yes.
A great game to use in a kind of party setting or if you've got another person kind of watching. But personally, Scott,
yes,
I loved playing that with my girlfriend, but she was so averse to making any decisions. She would just throw the controller at me every single time she had to, because she didn't want to be responsible for anyone being killed. And it wasn't the kind of chill, nice vibe time. It was me getting hit in the head with a DualShock 4.
That happens a lot. I forget what game my wife was playing through, and it's something where everything was fine apart from the boss battles, and she would just like be playing and playing and playing, and then she'd be like, oh, boss battle, and just fling it to the side, and I would have to, oh God, okay, I guess I'm going to do this. Like, I'm in the middle of like playing guitar or whatever I'm doing. Okay, let me just field this and catch this controller and get you through this boss fight and then hand you back the controller. I can't think what that was now. But yeah, I massively would recommend any horror stuff together. It Takes Two, I think, is the ultimate co-op game.
Yeah, I think they've got it in one there.
Yeah. And it's like the amount of mini games and competitive stuff that's in there. Next question from McAllister NYC. Now, he submitted two questions and we're going to do both of them because I actually really loved his first question, even though they replaced it with something else. But the one that they replaced it with was because I did a Nick Cage gif on the initial thing asking for questions and stuff. And so they said, first question, best, worst, and most iconic Nick Cage performances in our opinion. We'll do this first and we'll get to the other one in a bit.
Best, worst, and most iconic.
Best, worst, and most iconic. They might not be. They might be the same thing.
They might be the same thing.
They might all be the same thing.
Best, worst. Okay, can you go first? So I have 5 seconds to think about this.
See, Nick Cage has got a hell of a fandom these days. Obviously, we had another question further down about the new movie that he's in, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, where he's just become his. Nick Cage is almost like his own genre at this point. And so for me, it'll probably change as I start thinking about it. And I'd go with the most over the top ones. So it would be, I can't think of the name. What's the one where he's the vampire and he's running?
Vampire's Kiss.
Vampire's Kiss. That would be. That's all three. Like, it is, because it's the most stupid one, but it's also, like, it is the best. It's what you come in Nick Cage for. Personally, if I'm going to be completely subjective, one of the first Nick Cage performances I ever saw was Gone in 60 Seconds, right, which is one of the least Nick Cage things to watch on the Cagean scale. But I loved him in that movie, and I used to love that movie when I was younger. I've not seen it in, like, 20 years, but I used to think that was great. I mean, Wicker Man is probably his worst.
Yes, like, I would agree. Because
it's the messiest one. Most iconic, probably Con Air. Like, as you know,
Face Off, perhaps.
Maybe Face. Oh, he's got. Face Off is my best.
Right.
Yeah, Face Off is definitely my best because that's the most Cage, I think.
I think that's the most Cage. And yeah. I would put Face Off as most iconic because I think, you know, you get the introductory scene with Cage and it's just one of the maddest things you've ever seen. At worst, I'm going to go The Wicker Man because I do just think that's like a bad movie and a kind of bad performance.
He can't save it either. Like, he doesn't, his energy doesn't fit in that, what they're going for.
Absolutely not. And I think for best, honestly, I would go, have you seen, I think it's Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
That's the one where he's actually acting in it.
He's nuts in it still, right. But I think it's really good. I love him in that. And I think he's really good in Charlie Kaufman's adaptation, which is one of the more serious ones. Oh. You know, he's not doing the cagey thing necessarily. Right. He's not like playing into it. It's a more straightforward kind of, like when Adam Sandler does an Uncut Gems, you know?
He's doing another one with the Safdie brothers,
yes,
I think. Yeah.
Which I'm looking forward to.
One of the most anticipated films. Yeah, Nick Cage, a man unto himself, an island unto himself. So NYC's other question, which I thought was great, or we thought was great, was have we ever not wanted to review a game because we'd rather experience it as a fan? Are we able to turn off that critical part of our brains when playing something? Now, this is really interesting because, well, actually, I'll let you go because you initially picked this out as like, we should talk about this.
Yeah, I thought this was fascinating because this is something we talk about so much behind the scenes. Mm. You know, when you talk about the reality of being a video game journalist or a reviewer, none of which...
influencer.
Yeah, none of which I would class myself as, by the way. No. I guess I'm just a content producer. But when you kind of like talk about that job, a lot of people just assume it's like incredibly great. And it is in a lot of ways. Yeah. And it comes with a lot of privileges. But the idea of kind of crunching to get a game review out is not fun.
You're like watching a movie on double speed.
Absolutely. Yeah. And can sometimes actually not ruin the experience, but certainly cast a shadow over it, and that sucks. Yep. When you are looking forward to a game as a fan, like, mm-hmm. you don't want to have to smash it out in a weekend and then do all the content on it. And like I said, you know, I'm not complaining in a major sense. I love this job. I'm very privileged to be doing it. But I think when Elden Ring came out, you know, there were a lot of threads from people just being like,
I would have hated to review Elden Ring.
Absolutely. Yeah. People being like, I'm doing 10-hour days. I'm not even necessarily enjoying it, but the review's got to be of a certain standard.
The thing is,
at the end of the day, when you're doing that, it becomes a job in a way that you don't imagine when you're not in the industry. If that makes sense.
Totally. And the thing is, I don't necessarily think of them as, even though you're obviously valid, I don't think they're complaints. That's just being honest about the reality of what it's like to review a game. Like, take your favorite game or something with a sizable runtime, like an Elden Ring, and you're given it on the Monday and you're running the review on Friday. So it's like, okay, get through that game. And we don't play games during our office hours. Like, hardly any outlets will actually do that. So most of the time, you need to fit that game into your own time, your personal time, whether that's staying up late or whatever it is. I stayed up until 4 a.m. playing the Final Fantasy VII remake, and the review that's on the channel is what I then filmed at like 9 a.m. that next day. And that was my choice to do that. Like, we could have push the review or something, but there is also an impetus to get something turned around. I do think in the modern era, thankfully, the actual review, the impetus to get the review done isn't as important. I personally put a lot more credence on post-game analysis or like videos that come out alongside a populist playing something. But there is that big push to get a review done, or there is that big push to get something turned around in a week or in a few days or whatever. And certain people, certain publishers, PRs, will give you something a day before launch or 2 days before launch. And it's like, okay, go play as much as you can.
Yeah.
Get it turned around. And it's not, it hopefully doesn't come across as complaining. It's just the reality of what the job part can be.
100%. Like that access, I think we all take into account when we decide to, you know, review a game, because if we get a game a day before, you know, the release date, and then we have to kind of not crunch, but, you know, certainly rush the game to get out a review, you know, that's not something I want to experience with a game I've been looking forward to. I reviewed The Last of Us Part 2, a game that I was incredibly looking forward to. And for me, that was a great experience because we got it like 2 weeks before the game launched. You know, for me, that was a really comfortable time to complete a 20-hour story-driven game. And I didn't feel like I was rushing through it. I felt like I could experience it as a fan while I was reviewing it. And ultimately, I thought that was one of my best reviews because I got a chance to actually experience it properly.
I got to
actually process it, and then I got to write and create the content around it. And I'm like, if that was all video game reviews, it would be the best job in the world, right? But it's like, sadly, it's just not, and companies are different with their policies and what have you. Embargoes are always shifting around. And sometimes you do get those experiences where you come out of it and think, I actually would have just preferred to have played that on the day and done some, like you said, post game discussions afterwards.
Yeah, that's why we'll try and like hop into whatever notable games there are and at least do one of those 10-minute, 20-minute conversations, because we'll both be playing something, or I'll have played something at midnight or whatever it is, and do those little check-ins. But the thing you mentioned there about you'd rather play as a fan, and the mentality that NYC is talking about, I prefer playing something along with people. Like, I like seeing the Reddit community conversations. I like seeing the conversations on social media. Like, I like being part of that, and then us doing our conversations and knowing there's an audience there waiting for it. I find the review process, for the most part, to be quite isolating and quite depressing and sad for the most part. Like, if you get given the game early, like when you're younger, like I remember I used to work in a game store, and we got Assassin's Creed 2 early because it came into the shop before it was on retail. So I had, oh my God, I've got Assassin's Creed 2, the first sequel, it's a huge deal. And I got it like 4 days early, and I freaked out because it's like, you know, the right age for it. I'm like a teenager, and it was incredible. Was I a teenager then? Maybe I was early. Yeah, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And it's that whole thing. But as you get older, and especially when you start to,
one size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Doing it as a job, like, it's like, okay, I get this game early. How much is that worth to you? Well, it's cool. I get to play it early. I can't talk to anybody about it
because
they don't want to know spoilers in the office. I can't do anything online because I'm embargoed. I just have to sit here and play it, and I have to get it turned around in a few days or a week or something. And I obviously get the reality of how this might come across to anyone working any remotely more arduous job than what I'm describing. Yeah. Obviously. But to the same token, I just want to let people know that they are most times better off not crunching through a review. I personally would tell anyone who asks me, like, you're better off playing it at your own pace.
Yeah.
Like, other than the sheer content hits view side of it, that a review might net you, it might not. We've done so much to do the post-game conversations and tap into whatever conversations are happening post-launch because the review churn is horrible.
I would agree with what you said there about, like, the best part of video games in a lot of ways being sharing that experience with others. You know, we talk about all the time about the experience we had with Death Stranding.
Absolutely.
We didn't even need to know what I was going to talk about because we talk about it so much, because that weekend, getting it together, talking through our experiences, being like, did you see this? Did you do this? Like, that was so rewarding and great. And if one of us reviewed it, we would still have those conversations, but they would be out of time. You know, one of us would have had to have done that all by ourselves. And yeah, it could still be exciting to then bring those experiences to other people, but it's a different kettle of fish entirely.
I'll also say that, like, you know, it's not like neither of us are against doing the review thing. It's fine. It can be fun. Depends what it is. I just personally have found, having done this for like 9 years now, that like I just drastically prefer playing something along with a popular, whatever size that is, even if it was me, you, and a few other people in the office, or just me and you, at least you can have a conversation about it. Like, it's just so, like I said, it's so isolating, and then there's like the puzzle side of it. If you get stuck or like whatever, you can't do anything. You've just got to kind of brute force it and get through it. But to bring it back to what they were saying, yes, are there things you'd rather experience as a fan? I think the overall review mentality is interesting because it's a conscious decision to think that way. Like, so many times I've talked about subjectivity and objectivity. A game that, like, when we did completely subjective PS4 rankings, like, last week or whatever, or the week before, because I just think they're a distinct thing. Like, anyone's favorite film is not what they would say is the best movie in the world. So, like, they're different things. They've always been different things. People who try and say, like, you know, like, my favorite film is whatever, like, Vertigo is right now held up as the best film of all time. But, like, you know, your personal favorite film is going to be something different. And, like, I think that it's worth walking those lines. And, like, I don't know, like, it's always worth, like, separating them in a review context as well.
I mean, this is the thing, like, we probably haven't done it justice because this is obviously our job. So we think about it and talk about it all the time. Yes. Like,
I love that, all those things.
And stuff, 100%. Like, we could honestly talk for about 3 hours on the intricacies of this. But yeah, just to go back to the question, I think, I want to clarify that, you know, reviews can still be very good.
Yes.
I still really enjoy a lot of the ones that I've done. You know, I wouldn't do them if I didn't want to do them, you know, which is a kind of luxury that we have. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are certainly times where you've done a review and you've kind of gone, maybe that wasn't the best way to experience this game.
Well, the thing is, like, earlier this year, there was the, like, February, March, or whatever it was, I was juggling, like, multiple 100-hour games all at once. And, like, the Horizon Forbidden West review, I stand by everything that's in that review, but that was very thrown together across that morning because it was just, I just didn't have time. Like, it was just kind of put together. And I, like I said, I still stand by that. I think time's kind of proven me, personally, I think time's proven me right. That game was completely just went Elden Ring. I know Josh doing a little face, but for me it was like Elden Ring overshadowed it anyway. Forbidden West, the way it gets talked about, the fact people didn't finish it and the sales weren't as good as Zero Dawn or whatever, like I said, I stand by all that stuff. But yeah, there's always a way to experience a game just as a fan, and there's almost like a refreshing feeling to that, knowing you don't have to crunch or you don't have a deadline, because there's all the production side of that stuff to factor in as well. Like, you get your embargo and then you work backwards of like, well, I'm gonna have to film it then and write it then, which means I need to have finished it by then. Oh my god, that was actually yesterday.
That's like, it.
Yeah,
that always slips me up because I always think, well, I've got like, you know, a week. I could just, you know, write it the day before, you know, play it right until then and do it. But then you've got to take into account, you know, editing schedules, mm-hmm. you know, recording time and all that stuff. It's like a lot of stuff that goes into a review, you know, a video review, especially. And there's not just me involved, you know, there's like oftentimes you're involved. You have to do the thumbnail, you have to do all this stuff. Like it's a bigger process than I think you might, or at least I certainly thought coming into this job.
No, definitely. And I think, but again, to sort of like bounce it back around to why I prefer the post stuff, like one of my favorite videos, articles, pieces that I've ever put together is why Red Dead Redemption 2 is about the death of Rockstar. And that's not something I had those thoughts playing through Red Dead 2 the first time, but if I was crunching Red Dead 2 in like a week or 2 weeks, I don't think I would have had the specific, like almost more subjective capacity to pick that apart in that way. Whereas that's a take that came from like months of living with that game and the conversations about it and really talking about the script and everything and the general vibe of that game. So yeah, I'll always just point to post-launch stuff. Like reviews are great, they indicate whether a game's worth anything, but there's always that back and forth on how much it serves the PR, the publisher, versus serving the audience overall. And I just prefer the conversations that come from post-launch when the rest of us are playing it, than me in a bunker playing through something going like, it's really good guys, I've got a number to attach to this and hopefully you all care. Next question from Gaming with Greg, who says, with PlayStation New Plus tier thing coming out, what are some titles that would make you subscribe to the highest tier instantly? They can be classics or for just nostalgic reasons.
I literally had a dream that part of this
flew in through the window
backwards compatibility lineup was revealed, and in my dream I was annoyed because they had Resident Evil 1 and 3 but not 2. So I guess my subconscious has already answered this, and it would be Resident Evil 2 alongside the other games.
Mine is just all the third party stuff. Like it's going to be like Bishy Bashy Special. It's just going to be they'd have to do deals to get them. Like the other day, I think it was last week, me and Jules were talking about X-Men Mutant Academy, which was a phenomenal game, great fighting game, that unless they do deals with Marvel isn't going to be in there. And so like the PS1 was such a hotbed of licensed tie-ins. We did that whole podcast on incredible 6 out of 10 games. That's what I want from that service, and I know they won't do it, but that's what would make me subscribe. It would be Toy Story 2. It would be like just all those Simpsons wrestling, whatever. Like, let me dip into them for half an hour, for an hour, served up on a platter on one big screen full of tiles, and let me dip into all those games. Like, that's what I want.
I had like a complete, you know, just my mind was melting the other day. I was on a holiday over the weekend. I went to Amsterdam. We got the ferry back.
Hell yeah, you did.
And I had like no sleep on that ferry because I was just like puking my guts up. It was just... The waves were choppy. The waves defeated me, man.
Waves are a bad time, man.
The point is, I woke up after like no sleep, and I was getting the taxi back into Newcastle, and I was thinking, Matt, I might just go to CEX and buy Simpsons Road Rage. I might just go and get Simpsons Skateboard. And maybe that's
you do have a PS2 upscaler, so
that was it. I was just thinking, I could do that. Yeah. And then I got home, ordered McDonald's, and just fell asleep.
Oh my God! If you combine the McDonald's with Simpsons Road Rage,
this was going to be the plan. I couldn't justify leaving the house that again. I couldn't sanction that buffoonery, I'm afraid. I just could not do it.
I love that was like a residual memory from when we talked about the Simpsons trilogy. Yes. Of like road race, skateboarding, and hit and run or whatever it was. And L Wrestling, sorry. But yeah, I think it's going to be all those, oh my God, that game style reactions. That's what I want from that top tier. I don't just want Sony first party stuff.
No.
Because, I mean, what even do they have from that era that remained theirs? Ape Escape, like, or something? Yeah. Like, most stuff got snapped up by Activision or Xbox. Same thing, I guess, at this point. So yeah, I'm curious how that goes. I hope they do have, you know, like Metal Gear Solid and like Metal Gear Solid VR missions or whatever, special missions. You know, in the Crash trilogy, like they're going to need those things. But it's also weird because we're going up against the fact that a lot of those things have been remade.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to feel like I'm tapping into a PS1 in a way that the PlayStation Classic itself barely did.
I agree.
So yeah, I want the Tekken 3s, I want the Metal Gear Solids, but I also just want some fun little 6 out of 10 throwaway at the time, like tie-in game, Rugrats game. Give me
that. Rugrats.
Give me that stuff.
That was so good.
I don't care what you have to do to give me those things, but I want them. Next question from Chingiz, who says, what is your favorite non-blockbuster movie that's released since 2020? Mine is Everything Everywhere All at Once and Northman. I'll back both of them and massively Everything Everywhere All at Once. of all the multiverse movies out right now, ditch, don't bother with Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. It sucks bum. Go see Everything Everywhere All at Once. It needs the support.
Tell me why while I quickly check my Letterboxd.
So Everything Everywhere All at Once is directed by the same team. They're called Daniels. I forget their both names, but they both begin with Daniel. It's a team of two directors
who did
the Turn Down for What music video.
Did they really?
Yes.
I was going to say the Swiss Army Man movie, and but that too is more impressive.
So they have very much carved out a little niche of lots of practical effects, physical effects, and fun, like over-the-top choreography. And Everything Everywhere All at Once is all about this character played by Michelle Yeoh, who needs to sort of go through various multiverses, various versions of herself, to see different realities of how her life could have been, to learn more about herself in the vaguest possible terms. But because we're dealing with Daniels, you've got a martial arts universe, you've got a universe where they're both just rocks, you've got like, there's absolutely tons of stuff, and I don't want to ruin, let's say, more reveals of what the multiverses are, but as a crafted film and something injected with passion and purpose and an overall very well-written character and an arc and a resolution and lots of emotion and a phenomenal script, it poops all over Doctor Strange. And I think if we're talking about multiverse movies, or we're talking about more, because it's A24, we're talking about indie-funded movies that need to be seen, especially on the big screen, just give all your love to Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's immaculate. It's phenomenal.
You have absolutely convinced me, although I will still see Doctor Strange.
People will.
I don't know about you guys listening to this, but when someone like describes something as like one of the worst things, that makes me want to see it.
You need to see, you need to know.
I've got to know why.
I didn't care, because I'm largely checked out of the MCU. I didn't really care that much about Doctor Strange. I wasn't going to prioritize it at all until I saw, shout out to Skillup, I saw his tweet saying it's potentially the worst MCU movie so far.
Right.
And that all of the stuff it goes for didn't land. And I was like, well, I need to know what that stuff is. And so I hopped in my car last night and I went and saw a half 10 p.m. screening. And he's right. It's abysmal.
Scott messaged me last night, like 10:15. You were like, right, just had a coffee, going to see Doctor Strange. I think I was in bed. I was like, how do you have the mental fortitude?
Just keep going.
I'll be able to do that.
I'll sleep at 1 a.m.
That's absolutely outrageous. For me, since 2020, man, like I've kind of fallen off movies a little bit.
I agree.
I kind of became resentful of them, that they were one of the only things I could do in lockdown.
Ooh.
And that, like, just knowing...
You could have learned the Shakuhachi.
I could have. So but, close. You know, I was so into movies before then. I'd watch literally, you know, hundreds a year.
Mm-hmm.
I would always try to get 80 new releases a year.
Right.
And I just have failed with that.
I fell to, like, 6.
Recently, yeah. Yeah, it's gone way down. But there were still a few highlights. I loved Uncut Gems.
Yes.
Uncut Gems, you know, before the pandemic, was the movie that got me back into the theatrical experience. Mm. Like, for a long time, I was just so sick of audiences, man. I was so sick of cinemas. And then at the start of 2020, that came out. And it was such a great shared experience to have this kind of incredibly tense, well-put-together movie shared with people. I know it was a Netflix production as well and came out on Netflix, but we got a few screens over here that I loved that so much. And then last year, it was Another Round.
The Mads Mikkelsen thing.
Movie about, you know, drinking culture and middle age crises. I thought that was so fun and had such an energy. And I proper adored that. That was a movie that made me miss the pub. I don't think that's the message you're supposed to take away from that.
No,
film,
but still, but. I mean, the thing is, like, there's tons of stuff. I feel like now, because cinemas have had to roll with a punch or roll as best they could throughout all the COVID stuff. And I don't know what other areas or countries, regions or whatever are like. But for us, our like most regional cinemas, or at least the one for me that's nearby, has started doing more app integration stuff. So you book it all through the app, and you can get like cooked food. You can go get some chicken strips and some salsa and like. Is this going to make you want to watch the film? And I actually quite like indulging in that stuff now. I never used to. Most of it wasn't available before. But that's become the new cinema experience to me. The sort of, it's quite streamlined. Like, you sort of just order it like through the app, and you just go there. They scan your phone. You haven't got to use the machines. And it's like, and you can know exactly where you're going to sit. And even if you get sat next to some miscreants, you can go on the app in the cinema and be like, I'm changing. And you can just go somewhere else.
Okay.
And I love that. Like, because I agree with you that like for the longest time, I think we did a chatty face on it, that sometimes all it takes is one annoying couple of people in the cinema who won't shut up, who won't get off their phone, who won't stop crackling, whatever it is, to ruin a film.
I have no patience for that anymore.
No.
I used to just sit in silence, like gripping the chair.
Yes.
And now I'm just like, here, man. I'll spark you out.
Shut up, man.
Pack it in.
But you've got to unleash your inner Geordie. If no one knows what a Geordie is around the world, Google Geordie, G-E-O-R-D-I-E, and you'll find out.
I want to throw one more in. Yes. I know I've got three movies. This is not what.
Do it.
Bo Burnham's Inside is like one of the best things. I don't even know if you would count that as a movie.
I would count that. That's a masterpiece.
But I just think that's incredible. That lived in me all year. That was one thing that managed to stick in an era where nothing was sticking, like from a movie or TV show perspective. I think it was just great.
I'm going back to my diary on Letterboxd because there's not like, I mean, The Green Knight I thought was immaculate.
That was awesome. Yeah.
I watched so much old stuff like across all the lockdown things. So there's not that many that stand out to me that I like really love. Love and Monsters I was a huge fan of. I thought that was a really good Earth Defense Force meets Last of Us. It was a very good video game movie. Way better than it had any right to be. I thought it was extremely well written and just very well conceptualized. And just, I hate when people just default to the word fun because it tells you nothing. That was one of the only times it actually applied where I was like, you guys have loved making this. You've loved acting it out. It's very well shot and everything. And I thought it was great. It's not been that. I mean, obviously, just because of COVID, it's not been loaded. Well, we've not had that many movies that have made us go, oh my God, you need to see this.
No.
The Last Duel I'll shout out, that's classed as a blockbuster, I guess, because of the budget. But I thought that was, that's worth sort of shouting out. But that's kind of it.
It took me a long time to go back to cinemas as well, man. I wasn't there straight away. Like, it was only last year when I had my first kind of like going back to cinema experience. Right. Kind of trickled in since then. But yeah, for me, it's been a lot of playing catch up, and not being in that conversation has kind of like just kind of like sapped some of the motivation. Mm. But this year is definitely looking up. I've definitely seen way more movies this year. Way more movies in the cinema, and there's a lot of stuff that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I was looking at the trailers in front of Doctor Strange last night. One, didn't realize the Avatar movie was out later this year. It's Avatar sequel 20 years later or whatever it is. Bullet Train looks kind of cool. I'm mostly there for Hiroyuki Sanada, but like, I'm curious how that movie is. There was something else that I forget the trailer for, but yeah, there's stuff again. There's interesting stuff coming out. I also want to shout out, this might be classed as a blockbuster because it's a Netflix original, but the last one I'll shout out is The Adam Project, which that was surprisingly well written. Not the whole way through. It falls the F apart in the back third. But they do really good, genuinely good writing about like what would you say to your younger self if you were bullied when you were younger, for example, and you grew up to be someone else who's manifested all those insecurities to be more outwardly aggressive or whatever. If you have that conversation with your younger self and your younger self could talk to your older self, what would those conversations be like? And I thought that was actually very well done. And there was a part that actually made me tear up. It's largely because I've been through those things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I just thought it had a genuine quality to it that I was not expecting. And I just threw it on as like a trash movie in the afternoon. And I was like, this is getting me.
Yeah.
And shout out to asthmatic representation in movies as well. Someone taking their inhaler properly.
Nice.
Not just taking it and then carrying on with your day.
No.
You give it 5 seconds, mate. You give it 5 seconds. And you give it a minute and you breathe out properly. I want proper asthmatic representation in my movies. Last question from Jacob Sawyer, who says, I just finished playing The Last of Us Part 2 for the first time and I was slightly let down by the second half. Pacing is a mess. What highly rated game did you find disappointing? Also, are you ready for Elden Ring to lose to Gotham Knights for Game of the Year?
Hey,
I'm preparing.
Stranger things have happened, I would say. Is all I'm going to say about that.
I keep forgetting Gotham Knights is a thing. I'll be amazed if that game runs at a steady frame rate, to be honest, at this stage.
It might. I saw something the other day that said it might be next gen only. So I don't know if that's going
to
be true.
More stuff that's next gen only,
to
be honest.
It might have been debunked. I was seeing it whilst I had a head in the toilet on a ferry, so I might have dreamt it, but maybe.
Just a fever dream. Highly rated game that I found disappointing and then ultimately hated. I'm not going to talk about Returnal again. I will say Deathloop, because to this day, I don't know what people were smoking with that game. I know you've rated highly too, but there was 10 out of 10s for that game.
Yeah, I don't think, concede it's not a perfect masterpiece in my opinion, but. So you would go Deathloop.
That's what comes to mind, because I can't think of too many that were highly rated that I found disappointing. Because most of the time, I feel like overall the game's press is pretty bang on. I find that obviously I'm kind of like ghostly citing IGN there, because I think they did give it a perfect. They did. They give Deathloop a perfect score.
Right.
But they've also give Celeste a perfect score, and I would massively agree. I think Celeste is essential. Overall, I think we largely get it right. If you sort of amalgamate everyone, when all of us are saying this is worth playing, we're usually bang on. But for the most part, I really felt that wasn't the case with Deathloop. I was not any part of this is essential.
Yeah, it is. It's really rare that I kind of don't at least like it. I mean, I suppose disappointing is something else than kind of hitting.
But I guess
right?
that general feeling of like, yeah, when like most critics or most reviews or most energy is saying this is good,
don't get it.
You go, is it?
Yeah,
I think Deathloop would be that for me. It might not be the case that you've got one.
No. Like, nothing.
Maybe we're all really good at this. We're all really good at telling each other what needs to be played.
Is it? Nothing springs to mind for that one, sadly. I mean, I guess because I'm going through it right now, the second half of Sekiro, I remember being disappointed with that at the time.
Right.
Just because similar to their complaints with The Last of Us Part 2, I just got to the point where I was like, the pacing is off and I want this to be over. And I'm playing it again. I've felt it again, you know? You get to a certain point in that game and you start seeing repeated enemies, repeated locations and all of that stuff. And you just kind of think, why didn't you just make it shorter rather than repeating yourself so much? So that's the only thing that springs to mind because it's so recent, just the disappointing final few hours of Sekiro not living up to how bloody great the first 10 or so were.
We should do, this would be something for the Monday podcast, but me and Josh do, every Monday we do the wind up, whether it's winding each other up about something or it's just a winding up for the week with the latest news stories and talking points and whatever. But this would be something for that if we ever do just a general conversation on the most highly rated games that let people down. Like if anyone wants to tag us and stuff and shout us out on that, we'll do a whole podcast on that. Because I feel like we're missing stuff.
100%.
And so I guess I'm curious what people's minds go to where they felt like they were being sold a bill of goods and it wasn't that.
I think I agree with what you just said there. I think this is a good question and something to be explored in depth.
Yeah.
We should do it whether it's next week or the week after or whatever and see and maybe put out a tweet and see what other people also think and go through them
and also
and
like
say you're nuts.
Yes, well, yeah, totally. I mean, and also like just a general thing on do we think overall the games press as an amalgam like get it right, let's say. Or do you feel out of touch, let's say, with the gaming press? Have you ever, not you, I mean like in general, do people, how do they feel the games press represents their tastes or their wants or their needs or whatever in regards to like, you know, buying preferences and whatever? Like I said, do you feel like you've been sold a bill of goods where you're just like, what are you guys on about? This is bad or this is pointless, which is that would be me with Deathloop. But I'm doing another final question.
Come on.
Because this one's a banter question from Elfar Oliver, who says, Doomguy versus Master Chief versus Buzz Lightyear versus any other badass in armor. Set wherever you like in space, but not orbit. Pick your fighter and explain why. And more, but more importantly, will Josh ever play Ori?
I really thought the first part of this question was going to be snog, marry, kill. I honestly thought that's where it was going. So we're talking about who would win the fight. Is that
we're going to go fights in space.
Fights in space.
Can Doomguy even survive in space? I guess he's been fired across space.
Doomguy can survive anything.
Yeah,
Doomguy is my guy for this.
He might,
bet my house and on this.
To be fair, Master Chief can't really contend, but neither can Buzz Lightyear. No. The best Buzz Lightyear can do is blind someone with his laser thing.
Are we talking about Buzz Lightyear the toy or Buzz Lightyear the fictional character?
Buzz Lightyear the new fictional character who is the like ethereal version of Buzz.
Buzz Lightyear
inspired the character.
Star Command from the PlayStation 1 game.
Who's going to be the star of the new movie that we're all very excited about?
Yeah, we said. Yeah. I think Doomguy. Doomguy rips and tears for a living. Like it's his bread and butter.
The only thing that Doomguy doesn't have in his favor is that he doesn't have a way to maneuver around in space. Like he's going to go whatever direction he charges in. So like he's going to jump at you and he might go sailing right past you. Whereas Buzz Lightyear and Master Chief can maneuver in space.
That's true.
Better with Buzz because he's got the wings. Master Chief does have some jetpack equivalent if we're going off the loadouts from Halo 5.
It's
just a very simple little boost.
Doomguy has his big ship from Doom Eternal, or wouldn't that just eviscerate any kind of incoming invaders?
He does have the Fortress of Doom. But Buzz Lightyear could potentially unleash all of Star Command on him.
Master Chief, that is true.
If we're now in the timeline, I guess Chief is, well, the UNSC is decimated in Halo Infinite, so he hasn't got any resources at all. The pilot can come in from Halo Infinite.
I reckon they just have like a nice time together. Start fighting, and then like, they'd be like, Martha! And then they'd kind of just have, you know, they'd be chilling.
Resurrected franchise. And they all bond over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to throw in my question there. I want to do the snog, marry, avoid thing.
Okay.
So I was thinking about that as well. Yep. I would snog Doomguy.
Oh.
I would marry Buzz Lightyear.
Okay.
And I would kill Master Chief. Yeah.
That's interesting. I fear for my life getting anywhere near Doomguy in an intimate way, because I forget John Romero confirmed he's a virgin. I feel like the amount of stuff he's gone through now.
Well, you're only kissing.
You gotta make out. I think he's gonna get a bit carried away. I think Doomguy's a very aggressive man. So I would attempt to kill Doomguy.
Okay.
I would snog Buzz Lightyear. That's a lifelong passion of mine.
It certainly is.
I would say. And what was the other one? In Marry? Kill? What did I not do?
What have we done? Mari.
Killed. Mari Master Chief.
I like that.
Yeah. I want to settle down.
He's a nice guy.
Take the helmet off, as he keeps doing in the Halo TV show, which is a whole other thing to talk about, because the editing in that show is comedic in regards to how much he takes the helmet off and puts it back on. Like, they're fully playing with people at this point, is how ridiculous that stuff is. Overall, though, this has been the Untitled Banner Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
It's been a pleasure to fill in, Scott Tilford.
Hell yes. And we'll get you back whenever anyone else needs filling in. Barely a sentence, but it works. Massive thank you to all of you for listening and sending in your questions, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.